Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm here at my house on cooking duty. And we have a comedian. We haven't had a comedian for ages.
Ages. I love a comedian, Jess.
We've wanted Sarah Pascoe for years.
She's fabulous.
She's coming over and we are making a vegetarian meal. I thought she was vegan, but apparently she's a vegetarian. I've had quite a stressful morning. I'm trying a new heart rate thing, this Whoop thing, and...
Why are you trying that?
I want to understand myself better. Anyway, I'm doing that, and I just had a very stressful thing where I had to get into the children's activities. We did go for brunch at Jaconi's at the weekend. Ravinder Bogle has a new Jaconi brunch menu. I have to say that bread and butter, bacon and gruyere pudding was very delicious. We loved it. I'm still thinking about it. How was your weekend, Mum?
I was with you.
And we're tethered when we go to Los Angeles. Speaking of which, so pudding-wise is our friend from Los Angeles. Benny Blanco has a new book out called Open Wide. It's coming out in April sometime. And so we tried out one of his recipes, which is key lime pie.
Yep.
I feel like every great cookbook has to have a key lime pie, Mother.
Absolutely done.
And then for mains, I've done... Anna Jones has also got a new cookbook out, and it's called Easy Wins, and it is so good. For any vegetarians, you should absolutely be getting Anna Jones cookbooks. And this one is brilliant, and it focuses on different ingredients, like staple ingredients. So an onion or garlic, tahini, chili, tomatoes, and how you can use them. So I'm making an aubergine parmigiana, but it's done with chili... and a really nice oregano breadcrumb topping. And then I've done her wedge salad, which I didn't have the herbs for, the chives and dill, but it's really nice. It's a wedge salad. You make a tahini and yogurt dressing with some lemon juice and some garlic, and you do some croutons with green olives in it too. And it just looks really nice. So we're doing that for mains. We have Sarah Pascoe, who's coming over to talk.
So excited.
Well, lots of things, but she does have a new book out called Weirdo. Well, actually, it's not a new book. It was hardback last year, and now it's come out in paperback. It's called Weirdo. It's her first novel. She also has a podcast with an old Table Manners guest, lovely Carrie-Ad Lloyd, called The Weirdos Book Club. And she is coming over for lunch.
Sarah Pascoe coming up on Table Manners.
Sarah Pascoe, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
We have wanted you on for so long.
Yeah. I wanted to come on because my best friend Carrie-Ad said this is one of the best things she's ever done. Not even like promo, like the best things she's ever done.
We loved her.
She loved you.
We loved Carrie-Ad.
She had such a lovely time.
And Mum thought she was incredibly confident about her meringues. Her meringues. Have you ever tried a Carrie-Ad?
Well,
meringue.
She said, I actually want to tell you, I make the best meringues you've ever tasted in your whole life.
I've only seen them.
All right. Yeah, she wouldn't let you taste them.
Well, no, it's because I'm a vegan, but they're quite ugly.
Oh, my God.
No, actually.
Hold on.
We have to...
They said you were vegetarian.
I am vegetarian. I'm vegetarian. What I should say is, I've always been a vegan, and then with... pregnancy and breastfeeding, okay. I became more lax.
Because I always thought you were a vegan.
Yes, I was a vegan.
Are we okay with some cheese today?
Cheese will be great.
Did you see our faces?
Also, if you'd cooked a burger, I probably would have eaten it out for lightness.
Condensed milk?
No, it's all great. It's all going to be fabulous.
Okay, but just God. So it hasn't got meat in it.
But my point with the meringues, to bring it back to Carrie-Ad, is they always look very sloppy. But maybe they taste amazing. And I'm sure they do.
Sarah, you and Cariad went to Sussex Uni,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, that's right.
I wonder
yeah.
if we overlapped. I was at Sussex.
Oh, were you?
I finished in 2007.
Oh, so I finished 2004, so just before okay. you. What did you study there?
English literature.
Oh, I had no idea.
What did you study?
English, and so did Cariad. So a few years ago, they will have asked you, they did an alumni thing where they wanted to inspire their students and that they could go on to do anything. So they asked lots of the, I guess, notable alumni if they wanted to have a mask made of their face. Do you remember this?
I did not get that okay. email.
It was probably a DM on Instagram rather than an email.
Okay. So maybe, tell me more.
Well, everyone said no, apart from me and Frankie Boyle. Which meant, everyone would have said yes. You know, lovely to sort of say to students, you can do whatever you want with English rather than you can do nothing. You've got a stupid degree and lots of debt. And so, these students were all in a lecture hall and they had a choice of me or Frankie Boyle. That was it. For their future.
For a mask.
And they were all wearing the masks.
How did they make it?
Oh, my God.
The mask.
On, you know those paper ones with holes in
the
eyes?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So it's a picture.
So yes. It wasn't like a COVID mask, so you were, like, wearing your face on your mouth.
No,
okay. Yeah. Did you get one?
No.
Did they not even send one in the post?
No.
So I was thinking of those for your 40th, darling.
Of course.
We will wear them.
That's a good idea, like a hen do, yeah.
Now I'm thinking, just to discuss, I'm not going to do Studio 84 anymore.
Why?
I'm going to do closing parties.
I thought it was Studio 54.
Well, because we were born in 84.
Oh, sorry, of course.
Doing a little play on,
okay. What are you doing?
I'm going to do a closing party, like they do in Ibiza, but it's a closing party to my 30s. So it's going to be a big... How do you feel about that, Lenny? Maybe it's a bit niche.
We don't know closing parties. I know closing ceremonies from the Olympics.
I don't
Is that what you mean?
Yeah,
closing. Is that what you mean?
We'll bring a flag
yes,
around.
Yeah. Me on a chariot. Yeah. Flame
we'll get Danny Boyle to direct it for you.
Amazing.
Jessie, I'm not sure about that.
Okay, well, you don't have to.
It sounds too full on clubby.
Yeah, and everyone sounds like they'll be hungover and tired.
Where's the food?
You are tired at the moment. You're on four coffees.
Yes, but I also think the whole thing of turning 40 isn't like, oh, now I'm exhausted, my 30s are done. You got loads more to do.
No, but the closing parties in Ibiza are the big party.
Oh, are they? Okay.
So,
Kelly, you and I've never been.
And also,
I've been. I just didn't go to any parties.
I don't know about you, Sarah, but I've been going to a few big birthday parties, and I feel like there's too much small talk. And I think people, if you're going for a night out, you've got two kids, young children. If you're going out, you've got that babysitter, and maybe you've got the babysitter, you've got like parents
she
to help in the morning.
She wants to talk to people without little ones.
No, I
want to
dance. I don't want to talk.
Okay.
I
do you like
dance.
Dancing?
You're both wrong. The whole point of having a job in the evenings is you never have to go to anyone's parties or anyone's weddings or anyone's anything. Because you're booked up well in advance. So they go, what are you doing June 25? And you go, sorry, I'm in Manchester. You don't have to ever go anywhere, ever.
So are you more of a kind of a brunch gal?
Oh, no, I just never. No, don't at
like
the moment,
people.
I don't socialise at all.
Okay.
at
a
all.
A podcast.
A podcast, yes. I get to see Cariad because we have a book podcast. I get to see you today because we come around your house. I love work, but it's very limited at the moment because we haven't yet really worked out childcare. And my husband's Australian, so his family are really far away. So we don't really have a lot of family support. Oh, Lenny, that'd be lovely. Or steal you.
Do you live locally?
No, we're near Finsbury Park.
No,
we're north.
Sure
no, you can't. You
don't,
won't come
don't
there.
Go north,
yeah. Well, it's fair enough. I used to live in Lewisham, and then I would have been the same.
Oh,
yeah.
See.
I used to live there.
Do you miss Lewisham?
No. I don't. I found the trains hard. I love being on the Victoria line, actually. And you really appreciate
the best
it after
line,
you've been
isn't it?
Is that because you're always in Soho doing comedy?
Yeah,
I'm always travelling back from a gig. That's the thing, yeah. So it is important. You don't want to be standing on one of those like, oh, and now it's cancelled. There's one in 40 minutes in the drizzle.
Yeah.
On the way home.
Who's looking after your babies when you're doing comedy?
My husband, who also does
comedy.
He's a comedian.
Yes, so we're having to balance. Wow. We're having to balance and negotiate at the moment.
Did you meet him on the comedy circuit?
I kind of did. I was introduced to him in Edinburgh, but I don't remember because someone also came in with a really nice spaniel. So someone went, oh, this is Steen, that's his name. And I was like, oh my God, look at that spaniel. So I really like accidentally had good game.
Does he make you laugh?
I don't remember.
Oh my gosh!
No, he does.
Terrible.
No, he does.
He's funny.
He's adorable. He's you know when you're in the trenches with young children and earaches and not sleeping, you do need someone who's good company through that, going through it with you and then doing
something.
So do
you all
funny.
Have a big laugh in the middle of the night?
I don't
except
know if it's a big
the
laugh.
Baby.
There's lots of games and silliness, I would say. There's lots of when one person's down, it's the other person's job to bring a bit of chutzpah.
To bring the performance.
Yes, yeah.
Let's take it back to where you grew up. Where did you grow up and who was around the dinner table?
Right, so I grew up mostly in Essex. And we didn't really eat at a table, but mum and then two younger sisters. And I think we were a bit feral. I think there was a lot of sort of coping. So my mum had to work, you know, because she was supporting a family by herself. And there was a lot of microwave pizzas. And Christina, my younger sister, she only ate microwave chicken curry. And
any particular brand?
I don't know. I can't remember the brand. I know it had a paper box. That's all I remember.
It was eco-friendly then.
Yeah, back in the day.
It used to be Birdseye, darling.
Was it?
Yeah. It was paper.
It was always in a little paper box.
Was it? Yeah. So that's what I remember. So, and we very rarely ate around a table. And both of my sisters have rebelled from our childhood, Christina especially. And now they are very much, they've both got children and they very much sit at the table, don't have phones, have conversation. And then now they grow vegetables and things in their gardens.
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
Very healthy, because we didn't have a healthy diet growing up.
And what about you?
I like Deliveroo. I'm very excited by the fact you can order anything.
And what was your last Deliveroo order?
Shopping from Waitrose. Oh no, I did a Gales this morning. Theodore, my son who's two, gets really excited by the doorbell because he always thinks people just bring like these bags of cakes. And he's like, what is it?
Gales was this morning, and what was in the order today?
God, I feel really ashamed of this. Oh, God, why am I ashamed?
Don't be ashamed.
Because I like, my son gets to, he's only two, but he gets disappointed if I've only bought him one cake. So, because his favourite is the honey cake, but I think he likes the, like, oh, I've not seen this one before. Uh-huh. Have a bite of that. And then my husband will eat them all. But, so, two flat whites, second coffee of the day.
How did that travel?
Do they deliver flat coffee?
Yes, yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know. It's expensive. It is.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're £4.20 for a flat white before you've put in your
oven. But they're a good flat white.
Plus delivery costs.
I would say, actually, controversially, not strong enough. They're very weak coffee.
Why don't you make your own?
Well, you already have. So there's this is the current system. We keep going, the coffee's not strong enough. We're just such addicts because we're so tired. So go to the kitchen, you make one with one of those little French press boiling ones, because that's the strongest we can make it.
Do you mean the espresso one? The Italian one.
Jessie's got those. Yeah.
I think that's the strongest. That's sort of your... And then that was too far away, so I bought a sort of like an espresso machine for the bedroom, like a hotel.
For the bedroom.
So you have a little shot to get you to the kitchen. So you make your proper coffee.
God.
And then sometimes... So the Gales coffee is more like a milkshake to drink...
Sarah, you're definitely living on caffeine.
I am, yeah.
I love the shot to get you out of bed, like just to get you downstairs.
Jessie, I hate to say this, but that jacket is strictly Lewisham or Peckham Market.
How long have you been waiting to say that?
But I've just noticed how extraordinary it is.
Well, actually, have you got the matching, Margate.
Have you got the matching trousers?
No, but I'm ready for Glastonbury, so
Oh, sorry. Do one.
God, she's a bitch.
Oh, there is something about a mum's gaze.
Do you think?
I think so.
I now feel like I'm really standing out.
You're not.
I've got very neutral. I'm just going to take it
off.
No,
I really liked your jacket. Fine. There was definitely not a comment necessary for your jacket, Lenny.
That looks lovely.
No, absolute. I can't even get it off. I've got this new thing. It looks like I'm on a tag.
What is it?
What is it? It's called Whoop.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently it like tells you all your like... your things, your stats.
Oh, yeah.
And what so, like, mean? How you slept.
Yes.
You should not get one at the moment,
but
Sarah.
But you know how you slept.
No, you don't. You don't know how much REM sleep you had or deep sleep.
Yeah, but then
and there's lots of things that affect your sleep.
But what's the point of knowing that?
Can I tell you?
Because you can't alter it.
I'll give you an example. If you have one glass of wine, just one, you know, you will have less deep restorative sleep that night. And when you see it tracked on an app, you might make different decisions. Sugar, the amount of sugar you eat in the daytime might not affect one person, might really affect you. And then you start going, oh, I'm having bad night's sleep. I'm waking up a lot more because of my diet.
I would never sleep if I didn't have one glass of wine. I would actually not go
well,
to sleep.
Well, actually, yes. Whoop yeah. may tell you otherwise.
Yes. You might, the Whoop might say, have a Horlicks and a bath yeah. and read a book for a bit. Don't look at any screens. That wine isn't serving you well.
Tell us about your book, please. And why we want to read?
Do you always talk about this much?
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's great. It's just okay.
And then Alice has
I
to edit.
I thought it was a nice. I thought it led in quite nicely.
Oh, she was thrilled with that segue. She thought that was Holly and Phil.
I thought it was nice. You weren't insulting anyone's clothes. So
you look gorgeous. Is the book out?
Came out in hardback last year, and then it's just coming out in paperback.
Okay, need to buy it.
Yeah.
No, yes, because yes. Yeah, because it looks really, really interesting and fun.
Thank you. I've tried to be fun in it. It always feels like to ask someone to read a book of yours is asking them to spend such a long time with you, really, isn't it? It's hard.
I think it's okay.
Yeah, no, I think it's okay, but you want it to be good, like an entire album or a play or a film. Someone's going to spend a lot of time with you.
Do you describe yourself as a comedian or an author?
Comedian. Yeah. Comedian's my proper job.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, your proper job.
Yeah, my proper job,
so
yeah.
So when do you find time with two children and your proper job to write books?
Well, comedy is amazing for two reasons. One is that it is a short amount of time at night. So actually it's quite good with young children because you do have your day.
Yeah.
And then conversely, it is quite good for writing because you have a lot of time around it. And once you've got a set or a show, you don't spend a lot of time working on your comedy. You might do stuff. I might end up doing a little bit of writing before or after a gig, but you do get chunks of time. I mean, because most comics would work 20 minutes a day, and then you have the travel as well, which is good for writing. I know, it's a brilliant job.
Where's most of your comedy?
Just rooms above and below pubs, a lot of it, and then theatres and things as well.
You're too well known for that now.
No. The other really beautiful thing about comedy is it's very levelling. Like, you don't really ever get... You get the status to an extent and you tour and things, but really when it's new, you're right back to the beginning with brand new stuff, trying it out.
Have you watched Hacks?
I love Hacks, yeah.
Is it quite authentic?
I think it's always awkward watching stand-up that's been written by writers because her stand-up in it isn't great. And stand-up's never great in anything when it's writers, comedy writers writing stand-up and an actor performing stand-up.
So actually they do quite a good job considering it's not that funny.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not that funny.
I think it's funny, but like it's... The show is funny, yeah.
But then when she does a gag, you're like...
Yeah.
But isn't that kind of the point, though, that she's kind of lost her...
But the audience in the room laughs, so they obviously think it's funny.
Yes.
Well, there's Mrs. Maisel.
Yes, but her stand-up bits are sometimes funny.
Yeah,
not always.
Have you ever been in the writer's room to do any writing for television?
No.
Maybe you need to go on third series of Hacks and sort it out, babe.
I don't like working with other people, Jessie. Oh. I like being by myself. And I think the more you do stand-up, the more you become this little one-man band who doesn't like collaborating.
I find stand-up comedians to be... it's my idea of hell.
Yeah, most people think that, which is great.
And why did you... I'm sure you've been asked this question a lot, but, like, when did you think... I'm going to go and put myself in front of a room full of strangers.
It wasn't a conscious decision.
Really?
Okay. It was a meander. It was an accidental thing. I was trying to be an actor. I'd always wanted to be an actor. I lived with Carriad and her mum, actually, in Barnet. And that's what we wanted to do. We were auditioning for drama school. We were trying to do all of these jobs that were like acting adjacent, like TIE or working in old people's homes doing plays and all
What's
these kind
TIE?
Of things. Theatre and education. When you do plays in schools. And stuff like that. That's what I really wanted to do. And then I was doing like a topical sketch show and there was a boy in it who did stand-up comedy and I'd never been to see it. I thought stand-up was improvised. Like, I thought Jack D was making it all up.
Right.
Or Billy Connolly just went on stage and went, hey, a funny thing happened on the way here, and then it just grew and I just had no idea.
You script it before.
Yeah. And then I went to watch a gig with, you know, all these lads in raincoats with pads and I was like, and they weren't very good. And I was like, oh, I can do that. And then I did stand up for a while as a character. So I did it as an acting thing to sort of try and keep my hand in while I was temping and doing proper work.
What was your character called?
I can't remember. I had some few. I had Mrs. Nudie, who's a detective who was naked underneath her coat. And she solved crimes. I put all of these clues underneath the audience's chairs, and they had to sort of read out the clues.
Would you ever bring Mrs. Nudie back?
As I said it, I was like, where's Mrs. Nudie?
I feel the like world that's quite Julia, her. With Nighty Night. It kind of feels like she could be quite, maybe not.
Oh, maybe, yeah, I love her.
But you, yeah, should bring, you should bring Miss Nudie back
should,
for yourself,
I should,
maybe.
Maybe I should. But what I discovered through the live performance, there's a few things about stand-up comedy which are just delicious. Number one is it's quite democratic in that the audience don't want to see you and don't enjoy you, then you don't have a career. And if they do, you do. It felt so much fairer than the other crafts and arts.
Yeah.
There are lots and lots of people in other fields, we all know, who are amazing at what they do and don't make enough money. And stand-up, there's a lot of people who are fine and have a mortgage. And you can just work and gig. And the other thing I absolutely loved compared to acting was that you could ring up and get a gig. You can or turn up somewhere and go, can I play next week? And they just, at the point where no one's getting paid and everyone's doing five and tens. And then what I realised is the reason I was a terrible actor is I really...
What are five and tens?
Slots, so five slots, five minutes.
Okay.
5 and 10 minutes
but,
is what
but,
I mean.
But if you're doing a comedy night and you're doing 10 minutes, people aren't there for you particularly.
No, which means you have to win people over really quickly.
It's like doing festivals. It's like I love that.
And there's something very grounding about it because you don't get this like, hooray, you're the reason we left the house. It's like you're meeting someone who's shaking their hand going, hello, I'm Sarah, this is some stuff about me. And then I think it's very good for the ego. The reason I was a terrible actor was that I didn't ever lose myself in the way that incredible actors do. They become. And I always resisted it. And as soon as I did stand-up, I was like, oh, it's because I want to talk about myself. I didn't want to be Lady Macbeth.
Do you still enjoy talking about yourself?
Mm. I think I find that's where I connect with people. As in, you find bits about your life that are both idiosyncratic and universal, and then this beautiful thing happens where people go, I understand, or I feel the same. And that's what you're looking, that's why you make stuff, is to make yourself feel better about yourself, and hopefully, you know, other people feel better about themselves. And that, and stand-up comedy, that's what it is. That's why people go on and talk about themselves in quite negative ways, or the things that go wrong, or the bits where the things that happen where you're a fool. It's all to go like, you know, oh, we should laugh, shouldn't we?
Where was your first comedy gig?
It was in Balham, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Where?
At the Bedford, which has a new act
tonight on
Thursdays.
It's got, actually, it's got a very good comedy night there. Yeah, I heard.
So they have a big room with Banana Cabaret, and then they have a small room where they... Yeah, again, a night where everyone would be doing 5 minutes and lots of people very, very new to comedy or trying new material. And so audiences who want to go to those kind of things, when you see people who are very new... or new acts doing very new material, it really is it's watching a process.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's watching the sausages being made, and people, some people really enjoy it. So it's quite a safe-ish place to do it. It does smell lovely.
Oh, so you must know Anna Jones, because every vegetarian must know Anna Jones. Okay. No. So Anna Jones is amazing.
Okay.
And she's got a new book out, and I just made something from it. It's a aubergine, like Parmigiana, but it's got a little bit of... It's got a little bit of chipotle. Mum thought it was chipotle.
I would have said chipotle, so I'm...
maybe it is chipotle.
I don't know. I thought, well, it was chipotle.
We've now got three different things.
Chipotle,
chipotle, and chipotle.
I thought it was pronounced Japolinos, and it's not. So these words are really hard.
Yeah. Well, I thought there was a whole restaurant chain in America called Chipotle.
Oh, Chipotle. Is it not called, the restaurant chain's not called Chipotle?
But maybe it is.
Oh, it is Chipotle.
Oh, my God, you're right. I'm wrong. You're wrong. At least Mum's wrong, too. Chipotle, not Chipotle.
So I'm not so...
Yeah, you're right.
You were extra sort of...
Chipotle.
Chipotle.
Oh, well, I wasn't just far away.
Yeah,
you
it's a combination of the three.
Okay.
Yes, it's a combination of the three.
Fair enough.
We each had a syllable right.
And then this is a salad that actually is vegan.
Oh, gorgeous.
But
it looks really nice.
It's and this is another recipe. It's tahini with kind of oat milk creme fraiche, because I didn't have Greek yogurt. And then it's just got croutons and olives. I'm so sorry, my brain is not working today. Anyway, just put some in.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I never eat aubergines.
You know what? My
instant reaction is like, no, not an aubergine. And then you just cook them so brilliantly.
I don't think I actually have. I feel like some of them are a bit uncooked.
I think that's probably better than soggy, you know. Okay, I think fine. You probably really nailed it.
Okay, you're being really sweet. Thank you. Can we ask you, so would you call yourself a foodie, Sarah?
No.
Right.
No.
So it's a lot of Deliveroo Gales, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. pretty delish. But if we were coming over, mm. what would you order in? Okay, or well, would no, you
if
cook?
If you were coming over, mm. my husband, who is half Greek, half Australian.
Oh, we love Greek.
He does the most incredible roast potatoes.
Oh.
Anytime I think our marriage is on the rocks, you know, we've not had enough.
He brings
sleep.
Out the roast potatoes.
Yeah.
She just thinks about them.
Yeah. Or he takes pictures every
does
time.
Does he do it with lemon?
He does it with a few things. But yes, lemons are involved.
Do you look at a picture of the potato and you go, yeah, I know why I married him?
Yeah. Yeah, so he cooks it. If he were coming over, we would do you. He does a Greek style roast, which is much more potatoes and salads. And he would make you a big, some kind of hunk of meat that he's cooked for 6 hours.
How would you?
I wouldn't eat. But
he's
but,
not a veggie, no. And you no, still no. love him.
So yeah, was it like my big fat Greek wedding? No. When you got together, and was it like, were they all asking you to eat lamb?
Well, the opposite, Jesse. He'd already had a big Greek wedding.
Oh.
I was his second wife.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
And we weren't planning to get married.
Right.
But then he didn't apply for his visa in time. And there's another comic called Sakisa, who's amazing. And she's, her other job is that she's an immigration lawyer. And she said, if you leave the country and come back in married, that's the quickest way to get... So that's what we did. We Catherine Ryan was marrying her husband Bobby.
Yeah.
In Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And they knew this loophole that you only had to be in Copenhagen or in Denmark for 24 hours to get married there. And it's so much quicker to come back in married and apply for a marriage visa than it is to apply for a fiance visa, which takes 6 months.
Kind of Gretna greened it, but in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was that weekend or that week where you know the Thomas Cook. Sort of folded. I was in Cuba doing a documentary and then we didn't have a flight back and I hadn't told anyone. My documentary crew were like, oh, it's actually, you know, we're gonna the production company gonna put us up in this incredible hotel until the planes are back. And I was like, I had to get to Europe, I'm getting married. And then we came back on an aeroplane, which was the Thomas Cook staff, but they'd all lost their jobs. So
oh
they
my
were
God, they're all crying,
oh, like, crying and miserable and just going home and obviously not working. But sort of tokenly just doing their job.
Oh, that's so wicked.
Oh, babe, yeah. That's not the most fab kind of...
Well, it was live
and
done.
It's not a rehearsal dinner.
And it was very, very sad for them. But one of our crew, the sound guy, Sam, this flight was so overpacked, you know, full of... so he didn't want to sit next to anyone. And we told him if he took off his trousers... It was unallocated seating that no one would sit next to him. But then it was, he took his trousers.
Why did he do that?
I don't know.
Is that Miss Moody talking?
No, Mrs. Moody, yeah. But it just made us laugh so much because we were on a different road to him. He was by himself. And you know that thing where the doors are about to shut and then people get on and then the only seat they had was next to him and he was in his pants. Oh. So everyone was crying, but we were laughing.
That is so mean.
Yeah.
So you made it to Copenhagen?
Yes. Yeah, yes.
And where did you eat?
We had a Thai, one of those incredible noodly, you know, coconut base with sort of lime grass and things in a noodle soup. That's my favourite food.
Laksa.
Like a laksa,
yeah. Bucker, yeah, I'd have known that. Yeah. I could have done you one.
I would say that is, yeah. Oh, God, that's the best.
Is there a place you order that from?
I don't think you can get good enough ones. Oh, I guess Banana Tree do one. Mm-hmm. But no, I think you have to make that at home, really.
So... Your husband would be in charge of the meal if we were coming over. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, do you like drinking? Do you drink?
Yeah, I do like drinking. And it's just creeping earlier and earlier into the day now because I've got young children. It used to be like, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And now it's like, it's 3 o'clock somewhere.
What's your drink of choice?
At the moment, my life's a champagne. I'm just drinking champagne by myself out of a mug.
I'm with you.
Well, I'm waiting for bath time. No.
If the bottle's open, no, I've realized, you might as well.
I've realised that, yeah, if you're sort of by yourself and you don't have a social life. Obviously, I don't drink if I go out to work. I can't do stand-up after a glass of wine. But at home, I have some wine in a mug. My husband will drink red wine and I like champagne.
But do you have champagne on your rider so you have like infinite amounts
No. It's actually, I've been buying it because I don't spend my money on anything. So I've started adding them to the Ocado delivery.
What's your champagne of choice?
Whatever's got an offer on.
I'm not You want some champagne now?
I know, I just feel like I've admitted some real dirty secrets about my life.
Do you want champagne
No,
now?
I don't. I really don't.
Do you need a mug now?
No. All the drudgery in childcare, I think it's just, it's coming out in odd ways. So my splurges are food or drink related because we don't go out.
Okay, so last supper, you are going off to a desert island. You will be able to sleep there, but you will have none of your comforts and your favourite food. So you've got starter, main, pud and drink of choice.
Right, okie dokie. So you're just making yourself the stuff that you like, right?
You don't have to make it. It can be all delivery. Yeah.
Okay. I'd like a sweet potato salad with cannellini beans that my husband makes. It's really lovely.
Mm.
Yeah, or he can do it with or without feta cheese. Some black Kalamata olives on there. It's really, you know when a salad is really filling?
What's the dressing on it? Just oil and...
Yeah, probably balsamic and olive oil. Okay. Very classic. Oh, my favourite food is soup. Which is, I know, a boring thing, but I love soup. I love like a homemade minestrone with all the leftover vegetables.
Do you ever make it yourself?
Yeah, that would be my favourite thing to cook at home.
Have you got any tricks for your minestrone?
Yes, thank you for asking. a couple of Christmases ago, I bought my agent a cooking course and then I decided I wanted to go onto it, and it was Italian basic cooking. So the whole point with the soup is don't chop the small stuff at the beginning. You have to mince it really tiny. So with the olive oil, you need to mince your, this is what the Italians would do, your carrot, celery, brown onions and garlic. You mince them all and then put them in cold oil and heat the oil. And then no matter, your soup will have like a texture to it. It won't be really, really runny.
Right, okay. And
that's what you put in as the basis of the soup. And then it doesn't matter what else you put in, but you would put mushrooms and tomatoes and... things like that, but there shouldn't be chunks of those things. Minced, you just get all of the flavour from it, and then making your own stock as you go with all of the cast off bits, which you always think would be a hassle, but it's not.
Do you always have a bit of veg stock that's kind of like?
Oh no, I never keep it. I just make it as I'm making the minestrone, so it's not days old or anything.
That's a really clever idea.
You can still put a stock cube in there, but just all of the, you know, the outsides of the onions, the garlics, and all the old vegetables in your fridge in a stock taste incredible.
I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
Do you put pasta in your minestrone?
Sometimes, but lots of beans I'd put in. I'd put in two cans of cannellini beans and some butter beans.
And do you put the rind of parmesan in?
No, because parmesan comes from cow's stomachs.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Right. Okay.
But I'm not telling you off for doing it.
There's parmesan in this.
I'm freaking out. No, you mustn't forget. It's such a tiny bit. You mustn't freak out. Please don't freak out.
Are you sure?
I'm not freaked out.
Did we not get the brief?
You were a vegetarian.
They were right to say that.
Are they now about
what she eats?
Did they say no cow's milk?
Fuck. No, no.
Oh, you're about to throw.
No.
Okay, fine.
It's not cow's... This is me telling you the distinction.
Okay.
But it's not. So parmesan isn't vegetarian because it's from cow's stomachs, so it's meat. What would be counted as meat. I'm telling you that in case you have other guests, but that's not... I don't have a problem and this is delicious.
Oh, my God.
So they take the lining, rennet, to make cheese.
Oh, you're fair.
Yeah.
Some really good cheeses that people like, so that's why. So it's not a dairy product where the cow stays alive. That's the distinction.
So I could have made this bag bowl.
No. It's a tiny little bit of parmesan on a thing that's going to be there anyway.
Okay. Fuck. Do you like parmesan?
It tastes lovely.
I won't be offended if you don't want to eat it. Eat the salad.
I am eating it and it's delicious. Okay. And as I say, it's all been very veganish for me for a couple of years.
Pudding. Are you a big pudding person?
I'd just say some of Carriad's incredible pavlova that sounds so nice.
I feel like you need to try it now.
Yeah, I definitely will. I bet you I've had it and she'll be angry with me for forgetting. Yeah, ice cream, chocolate. This is the trouble with having small children. You just eat what they've left on the plate or dropped on the floor. You just end up going like, no, don't give me one because I'm going to eat what he spits out.
I know. The thing with me is I have theirs and then I have my own helping too.
Good, okay.
Yeah. So we have pudding for you.
Yeah.
It's key lime pie.
Lovely.
Sounds lovely. Is that going to be okay?
Yeah, really great.
Condensed milk doesn't have any.
No, yeah, okay. It's all going to be fine.
Okay. Would you like A tea or a coffee?
No, I'm all good with water. Thank you.
What's a really nostalgic taste from your...
B&H.
Is it?
Mm. The gold pack.
Mm. Or the you get, you're just walking down the street and you just get a... That is a full-strength cigarette.
When did you smoke?
When I met Carriad. Carriad and I smoked out of a window for many years.
When did you start?
I started at the Millennium Dome when I was 18.
Millennium Dome?
Yeah, I worked at the Millennium Dome.
Celebrating the Millennium?
No, I worked there. It was my first job when I was 18.
What, in the Body Works? Like, was it the exhibition?
Yeah, back in the day. I thought it would never close because it was so brilliant. I couldn't believe people said it was only for a year. And I was like, no way.
Did we see the Body Works?
We went to the Body Works. Mm. I don't really remember the other bits of it, but everyone was like,
Did you see the show in the middle?
Possibly. Probably.
We've seen one show there once.
What?
Prince.
But what did you used to eat when you were at the Millennium Dome?
Millennium Dome. What did I eat?
Did you bring packed lunch?
No, I feel like I definitely had no money. That would have been in the days where I'd have had a mashed potato pot that you poured hot water into from the kettle.
Smash,
yeah.
I think you've really had slim pickings. As a
I don't think you understand that, like, budgeting a pound for your lunch kind of thing. No, they definitely had food in the Millennium Dome. They had a Covent Garden soup company. I like soup. But no, I would have survived on a cup of soups and smash, yeah. For many years.
Wow. Mm. Millennium Dome. So you just have a Benson and Hedges just to get you through the day.
When did they stop allowing smoking inside the Millennium Dome?
I don't think you were allowed inside, but it's right on the River Thames, which is a lovely place to smoke. If you're looking for a nice view, you go to smoke next to the Thames, looking at the river going, one day I'm going to be someone. Like that.
Were you writing comedy then?
No, but I was doing character work, which was basically meant they gave you a costume and you got to improvise with members of the public. And so I really felt at 18 like, oh my God, this is going to happen. I'm going to do this. Like, oh, I'm going to be in EastEnders. That was one of my lofty ambitions.
To be in EastEnders?
Well, just to act, but yeah, definitely.
The characters in the Millennium Dome, was it kind of like going to like London Dungeon?
That kind of thing, but I would say probably, maybe quality-wise, not even as good as London Dungeons. because we were kids. I mean, this is what's incredible about that job, right? Millennium Dome, I didn't know what it was. It had people from all over the world, all suddenly employed in one place. And for the people who were like doing the acting, we worked hour on, hour off, because obviously, and that means that you got paid for half of a shift you didn't work. You just sat around smoking and chatting and reading magazines. It was just brilliant. And then you had these costume cupboards where you just went in and you got given like your roles for the day, like you had a rota and you're like, okay, I'm Money Man this morning, then I'm Girl in Orchard this afternoon, or I'm an alien. And then you just decided what it was. I had an old lady character who just walked around telling people she was lost. It was just like that. You're just making things up. You're just being silly. It was silly.
Do you want to help yourself? Because you'll know how much you want. Or do you want me to...
You do it, yeah.
Are you ready for a bit of a slice?
All right, okay. Are you a generous slicer? Oh,
no, I don't know.
No, that's not generous. No, more. More. Okay,
I think you should start with that.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Do you have something in your back pocket if things aren't going well on one of your stand-ups and you think, oh, I'll have to bring this
up? Boris joke out.
Yeah, or some joke that you know is always going to make people laugh.
What you should have is a toolkit where you get more used to the fact that the different ways that things can go wrong and how to deal with them. But I found that the only thing that makes you go really wrong is pretending something that's happening in the room isn't happening. So you just have to be with what's
present,
going on.
Yeah.
So for instance, let's say it's the nightmare. You start your set and it's silent.
Yeah.
I do think you then have to address the silence in a way where you aren't scared of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but you're not any less worthy.
So, like, how would you address the silence then?
So
would
really,
you be like...
I honestly would say, look, you know, the thing with making jokes is it's a lot like sex in that it's more embarrassing to stop than it is to just carry on going, pretending that the other person's enjoying it.
That's good.
And then, and I say, because, you know, and then, and I say, but this is just awful. Shall we stop? Shall we do something else? Like, because that's what you should say when you've, you know, if you're in bed with someone, you should, rather than both, you know, doing your best moves, you know, this work with the last person. Why aren't they going for it? So I use that analogy.
Okay.
And I pretend we should just, like, put on a Lee Evans DVD or something. and then usually what you would do is try and talk to them. Yeah. You know, so, like...
To hecklers, have you had a shocker? Ever.
Shockers, mostly, again, the rule should be that heckle is an open door. If it's too much about you, because it's so different to, like, having, like, I've got to sing this song, right? You know, I don't have an audience who've come to hit. They don't know what I'm going to say. It's not like, you know, they've bought an album. They're thinking, oh, when they're going to play that one. Mm-hmm. They don't know what I'm going to say at all. So someone heckles you, it's a door opens, you go through it. And it's, so it all has to be about... The only problems are if they're too drunk, you can't hear them.
Yeah.
Because you think that the worst nightmare would be someone saying, you're not funny. But that's only a nightmare if you're scared of that. It's so much more, you really do have to sort of lean into that. Either they're right, and you are normally funny, but I'm not tonight, what's going on? And we investigate that together as a team. Yeah, or just more like...
That's a team.
That's a team. We workshop
it. It sounds like almost like an escape room / one of those fantasy novels where it's like, are you going to
choose your own adventure? It
is
a bit like that. It is a bit like that. And it's a live performance, and it only happens then. And the audience, they just have to know that you're not scared, like that you're fearless, that this is the show. The show is whatever happens now, and it could be nothing that I thought was going to happen, or it could be everything. And usually those things, they warm everyone up, you get to know each other, and then the rest of the show is just, it just falls out of you, this different rhythm.
Have you felt the need for that, like, it's adrenaline, right? It's kind of a junkie, like this need for this kind of mad sense of fight or flight or whatever. Do you feel like you need it even more, like you need that Nespresso in the morning at the moment since having children, or do you think that actually you're like, you know what, maybe this could just go quite kind of... Like,
everyone I know who's had children, all the women I know who do comedy had children got better. And I watched them and I thought, this is something incredible is happening on. But because it made comedy less important, it made them better at it. Because comedy isn't important, it is throwaway, it is inconsequential. Don't ever think it. And all of them got better. And I have a similar version of that where I feel much better on stage at the moment because when it's over, it's done and I'm not thinking about it anymore. I'm literally thinking about getting home for a feed, what we're doing tomorrow, what's prepared, the drudgery.
Yeah.
And there's something, I'm having, my son might take a bottle, which is really hard. And it means that just before I go to a gig at the moment, I'm literally doing his last feed, hoping he will last until I get home and not just, otherwise I get texts at work saying that he's screaming. And there's something about, like, literally being in the dark with no, almost no clothes on, no makeup, not ready, feeding my child. There's something so earthy about it that I go to my gig and I'm not having this big, like, oh my God, I hope it's okay. So I just go on and then it's happening.
Mm.
And there's something quite healthy about that as a new state. A bit like if you've got jet lag or something, you know, you just have an altered state and you suddenly go, like, oh wow, I was plugged into something else.
I totally get that feeling, and I think... you're on to the next thing.
There's no wasted headspace. There's no headspace to waste, so it isn't. And then also what I feel is incredibly grateful for my job, because sometimes I get to go out and do something. The other day, someone cancelled Letters Live, and so they asked me if I wanted to do it. So I literally went, I said to them, I can't get for the first half because I have to do, you know, we've got this double bedtime. So I got into it. They were both horrible. I got into the cab at 8:30, got to the Albert Hall at 9:00, went on at 9:15. I was on with Harriet Walter, reading a letter with her after Benedict Cumberbatch. I had a little flirt with Damien Lewis, went home. And then, and I was like, I wish I could say to my babies, Mummy's okay. Mummy had a little mummy night for Mummy.
I was cooking when you, I mean, I was sorting food out when you were talking about Weirdo.
Oh, yeah.
Is it your first novel?
Yes. So I wrote two non-fiction books, and then this is my...
best fiction.
How does it feel writing a novel?
I'd always wanted to write a novel, and I always, when I was 14 and I planned my life, I had that I was going to, that I was going to, in my 40s, you know, start my...
Who are you going to be married to, as well?
Oh, I hadn't planned, when you were 14. Probably take that, all of them at once.
All of them at once, yeah, yeah, of course.
Because I couldn't choose, and I would never have left Jason out or Howard, just not to be mean.
You couldn't even
no,
out.
It wouldn't be mean, no, it's all or nothing.
Polygamy from 14.
Yeah. So I knew I wanted to write a novel, and I knew I loved books, and then I obviously, like you, just studied English, and I think there comes a point, because you know that there are so many brilliant books in the world, how arrogant to add one, and the weight of that. But yeah, so I pitched it, and then I wrote it as Theo was born. So I wrote it in my very early mum stage. He was waking up in the night, and I didn't realise I had a mania. So I thought I didn't need to sleep anymore. So I was getting up. I'd been told
Did you have postnatal kind of... I just, not psychosis, but
a mania. I just was so adrenalized. I was really happy.
Yeah, right.
And I'd been told to pump to make more milk, so I was feeding and then pumping. So I was just like, what's the point of going to bed for 20 minutes? Write a novel. And and so the beginning months of it were that, but it did mean I got lots of words out. And I loved writing it. It felt like being at primary school again, like crayons and proper creativity, and you just get to tell yourself a story. And I had something that if I'd heard another writer saying it, I think it's very pretentious, but where the characters decide things for themselves. You sort of, you think up some things and then they start doing them by them.
So you just facilitate that.
Yeah, you're just typing it up, you know, and they fight against you sometimes. You know, you've done a plan where this is going to happen and then they're like, no. I'm doing a bit.
I just watched American Fiction last night.
Oh, we've started that. We're watching it in stages. Yes. Yeah.
And he starts the book, the bad book, and he starts with the title. Is that how it is? You start with a title and then work around it?
When I was doing, with my non-fiction, I was doing an evening with Faber. They do these sort of author events where everyone reads 5 minutes from their books for the booksellers. And I watched a novelist and I was really making fun of her because she started, this is her speech, you know, she's so serious. Like, I had an image in my head. And it was of a girl and she was on the courthouse steps. And I thought, what is she doing there? And my novel was born. But
bloody hell.
But it is a bit like that.
You're not that person.
No, I'm not that person, but you do have this...
Do you kind of want to be that person
that voice.
That's my... When I do my author readings, good evening. but I did have this image of a girl in a pub in Essex where I grew up and where when I had, you know, minimum wage jobs, I was very miserable because I thought I had this stuff to give to the world. And I think... What happened with me is I was quite delusional. Absolutely no one had told me I was good at anything, and I was really sure that I was going to have a certain kind of life. And then through a variety of steps and mutations, a lot of those things have happened. And it's like this odd kind of... it makes reality really soft if that happens. It feels a bit like you're God, like you wished a thing to happen, or that it's not real. But what I wanted to write was a character where... She has exactly the same delusions, but actually maybe it's not going to happen. So I just wanted to explore just that thing of your life not quite reflecting yet what you want.
Who would play the part if it gets made into a television series?
What I would love to do is actually to go into a pub in Essex, because the whole thing is, if you're working in a pub and you think someone's going to come in, especially because so many people are, you know, performers, they're waiting for a director to come in and go, it's you, you've got what you're looking for. So I'd have to cast it like that.
Like go Willy Wonka golden ticket. You are invited.
Go around the pubs of Brentwood looking for a girl going, hey.
You can have lots of mugs and champagne there.
That's it. Tax deductible, I believe. I'm casting my TV show, yeah.
Sarah Pascoe, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you both.
A pleasure to meet you. And thank you for coming away from, I know, the precious time. So
I know,
yeah.
It's lovely. It's so nice to do something.
I'm worried about
you. They get bigger. When I go to yoga, I finish yoga and they're bigger in my gym top than when I started.
Sarah Pascoe is very funny.
she is very funny. The whole science behind comedy.
It was a revelation. I loved hearing her talk about comedy.
She's very clever.
She's really bright. She is a bit of an overachiever, let's be honest.
Yeah.
She's just brilliant, and I really appreciate that she took the time out. She's got a 5-month-old at home who won't take a bottle.
Needed her.
And you could feel her clutching her breasts and knowing it was time to go.
Yeah.
I just fed a vegetarian beef stomach, apparently. So I'm really embarrassed, and I apologise to Sarah because I actually feel really let down by all the fucking vegetarians we've had that either didn't know this vital information or chose not to share it because I've just given Sarah something that she did not want to eat, and she was so sweet. It was like that thing where your kid hits somebody else in the park. And the mother says, don't worry, it's okay. Don't worry, it's okay. No,
it was a bit like that.
Like, I've literally broken your kid's arm and you're going, don't worry, it's fine. She was so sweet to me, and I now feel really guilty.
Do you?
No one has ever told us about this information. Not only have I learnt a lot about
comedy,
I've learned a lot about cheese. Rennet in cheese, and I'm now really regretting it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah Pascoe. I'm really sorry. You were so sweet.
And gracious. And gorgeous. She's very serene. That's the second serene comedian.
Who's the other serene?
Catherine Ryan was very serene.
Yeah.
Both very serene, in control, I felt.
Or just really tired.
Do you think?
They've both got very young children. Maybe she's really tired.
How many coffees had she had before she came on?
Before, I'm obsessed with the Nespresso before getting down. Like putting a hotel one.
Actually, in the bedroom to get genius. It downstairs.
That's genius. Sarah Pascoe's book is out in paperback, Weirdo. You can listen to her book club podcast with Cariad Lloyd. You can probably see her in Soho or somewhere in London. Very
Clapham Grand, Bedford.
On any Friday or Saturday. Bedford, yeah. She seems to just live
Should we
for
go
it.
To a comedy night?
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Be with you next week.